History at Hand, revision at your fingertips. The Roaring Twenties. This podcast is in two parts, one of which focuses on the features of the economic boom in the 1920s, and the other is on the life of society during that time and how it affected different groups. We'll start with a brief recap of why there was such a boom in the 1920s. Much of it was down to speculation, the investment of people in stocks and shares, which were on a continual rise at that time. On top of that, the American economy was very strong, especially following the First World War. America took the lead in new industries, such as electrification, consumer goods, the automobile industry and in chemicals. This was all helped by the Republicans' policies of laissez-faire, which meant that business wasn't overtaxed and regulation was very lax. Tariff barriers also meant that American industry was protected from excessive foreign competition. The boom most clearly made its presence felt in America's big cities and in California. The building of skyscrapers in places like Chicago and especially New York symbolized the great confidence in America, its economy, and in their future. Just as the center of cities were growing upwards, the outskirts of the cities were growing outwards. Suburbs were spreading. The middle classes wanted somewhere a little safer than the center of towns, and now that the motor car was around, they could easily commute to where the office work was. In the 1920s, consumption was king. New products and new production methods meant that things were much, much cheaper than previously and were available to a much wider range of the public. Cars, fridges, radios, washing machines, vacuum cleaners all became the new must-haves within the middle-class suburban home. Many found themselves becoming richer as wages rose in the 1920s. Even more made their money using the stock market, where there were astronomical sums which could be gained. American people became more and more measured upon what symbols of status, what symbols of wealth they actually had. Advertising encouraged people to keep up with the Joneses. Many of the tools used in propaganda in the First World War were now used to make people want to buy things. On top of that, there was now easy credit and higher purchase, so even if you didn't have the wealth necessary to buy the new car straight away, you could buy it on credit and pay it back over a series of years. Levels of wealth in the United States would have been unheard of or unthought of in other parts of the world. For every 5 Americans, there was one motor car. That compares with 1 in 43 for Britain, 1 in 7,000 for Russia. This is just a clear indicator of how successful the American economy really was. Yet still, not all were able to benefit from this boom. The boom, it could be said, was a feature of the big towns and cities. Those living in rural America, some 60 million souls, found that the boom was not the great success for them. The American farmer had done very well in the First World War. American supplies had essentially fed the Allied war effort, but now the war was over, things were very different. American farmers now actually produced more food than they can physically sell. New production methods, new machinery, bringing in new land, all of these things had led to more wheat being produced than was actually needed. And because the government introduced tariffs, it prevented Americans from selling their wheat overseas. As a result of this, many farmers went bankrupt. An industry that was worth $23 billion in 1919 was worth a mere $13 billion by 1928. Many rural banks went bust. Many farm labourers found that it was better to up sticks and move to the cities. This was particularly the case of many of the poorer blacks from the south. These blacks and other migrants actually found themselves getting into the lowest paid jobs because they had the least skills. They found themselves in competition with many of the existing inhabitants of the towns who resented how wages could be cut by this influx of new labourers. Workers in the older industries like coal mining and textiles also found that the 1920s were not a boom time for them. They discovered that old jobs now no longer paid in the same way that they used to. As a result of that, there was high unemployment in many of the districts where these traditional jobs took place. In 1928, a North Carolina mine worker could earn $18 for a 70-hour week. That's at a time when $48 a week was considered to be the minimum standard for a decent living. So as we can see, amongst the plenty of the boom, there was also those who were suffering, and those in long-term unemployment, and those in the farming industries were going to suffer and will find it even worse once the Depression strikes the rest of America in 1929. When you have questions on the characteristics of the boom, it is important to remember both sides, those who benefit and also those who miss out. Without doing that, you can't guarantee yourselves the top mark bands. Now we have examined the characteristics of the boom, it is time to move on to what life was like for people in the Roaring Twenties, and to explore many of the features and aspects of living during that time. We'll have a look at how life was for blacks in America, and for women, then we'll go on and have a look at entertainment, and finally prohibition, and the gangsters which were a result of it. For blacks, the 1920s were a period where hostility towards them seemed to increase, particularly from the Ku Klux Klan. In spite of the ending of slavery in the 1850s, black Americans still found that their path to equality was barred by whites on many, many different occasions. They were prevented from voting, prevented from getting good jobs or the best land. They were prevented from achieving a worthwhile education. As a result of this, many blacks were still in the poverty which they had lived in during the slavery years. The Ku Klux Klan was a white supremacist movement whose aims were to keep those who were not white Anglo-Saxon Protestants from achieving all that they could within America. They targeted Jews, Catholics, but mainly the blacks in the poor South. The Klan was formed in the 1850s and enjoyed a resurgence after the 1915 film The Birth of a Nation. In this film, the Klan were portrayed as being the saviours of American values. By 1924, there were 4.5 million members of the Klan across the United States. Most of its members were from the Midwest or from the Deep South, where poor, white, working class individuals felt most vulnerable and threatened by black society. Klansmen kept their identities secret by donning the white hood. Then they could carry out a series of illegal acts in order to threaten and terrorize the black communities. This included burnings, tarrings, lynchings, beatings of blacks. Many blacks were forced to actually leave their homes. Many left the South for good and moved to the cities in the North. The Klan were able to get away with their actions because many members of the police, the local judges, and the local politicians were in support of them, if not members themselves. As a result of that, it was very hard to get a conviction against Klan actions. In the 1920s, the black populations of both New York and Chicago doubled. There were some glimmers of progress being made by the black communities during this time. A small but effective black middle class was being formed in some of the big cities. Blacks in particular made a name for themselves in the entertainment industries, particularly in the very popular jazz music clubs. Particularly organizations such as the NAACP and the UNIA were able to fight for black rights in a way that hadn't been seen before. Their progress wasn't always successful, but they did raise the profile of black issues, especially within the northern town. Still, most blacks in the 1920s faced a life of poverty and injustice. Black life expectancy was 10 years below that of whites at the time. On top of that, blacks ended up with the worst housing in the worst districts of town. It was still another 3 decades before the civil rights movement would finally get black Americans on a more even footing with their white counterparts. There is widespread debate as to whether the role of women in the United States made significant progress or not in the 1920s. On the surface, it seemed like much progress had been made. Women were given the right to vote, and many started to live new lifestyles, especially in the big cities in the North. These young women, known as flappers, were able to get their own jobs, didn't want to just settle down and get married, were seen going out with boys, drinking, smoking, and enjoying themselves. It seemed like, for the young and for the rich, the 1920s was a great time to be alive. The media, and especially the movie industry, looked to portray many women in this role. Film actresses like Gloria Swanson played roles in which women were strong, tough, independent-minded individuals. This, though, was not the case for most of American women. Most women in the 1920s did not adopt or even accept the flapper lifestyle. Most remained where they had always been, in the traditional roles of being the housewife and being the mother. Those women who were in work were generally in low-paid, low-skilled jobs. Even if they did have the same job as a man, they would often be paid much less than they would. Women may now have been entitled to vote, but very few women politicians emerged. Women candidates were often seen as unelectable. It is easy to be lured in by the image of the flapper, short hair, short skirt, to think that women made great progress in the 1920s. The reality was an awful lot more divided. The Roaring Twenties are often described as being one long party. This was the age of the jazz club. This was the age when radio became the most popular medium for music, for advertising, for comedy, for talk. It was the era of Babe Ruth in baseball. Sport had become very popular, and cinema had really taken off. Hollywood was now synonymous with the movie industry. The 1920s was when actors such as Rudolph Valentino and Charlie Chaplin became household names. People would often go to the cinema once or twice a week. New fashions, new dances, new crazes all became the rage for a short period of time until the next big thing always came along. There had to be a backlash to all this merrymaking, and of course there was. Jazz was seen as a corrupting influence, the fashions were argued to be far too provocative, sex, it seemed, was everywhere, and to many in traditional America, this was quite simply out of order. Traditional America's great triumph over the corrupting forces of urban America was the act of prohibition, and it turned into be one of the great disasters of America's early 20th century. Prohibition came out of the temperance movement, who believed that alcohol was an evil and corrupting influence upon society. Many adults would spend their wages, their families' wages, in the saloon bars, and as a result, nothing would be left for the children. Alcohol will lead to madness, poverty, disease, crime, and destruction. The cause of prohibition was reinforced by the First World War. Many of the great brewers in America were German, the enemy, and as a result of that, it was the patriotic thing to avoid drink. By 1916, 21 states had introduced prohibition, and in 1920, the Volstead Act was passed. This, following the 18th Amendment of the American Constitution, led to the banning of the manufacture, sale, and transportation of intoxicating liquor. The law was met with widespread disapproval and widespread flaunting of it. The enforcement agencies found it an impossible task. Speakeasies were set up in towns and cities and villages across America where illegal alcohol could easily be purchased. Moonshine, illegally distilled alcohol, was also on sale. This was sometimes so strong it was deadly. Bootleggers smuggled alcohol into America from Canada or the West Indies. There was always a plentiful market for these goods. Officers who were meant to be reinforcing this law were often corrupted by it. They found themselves taking backhanders, illegal payments in order to keep things quiet. It proved very, very difficult to actually convict anyone of crimes against the Prohibition Acts. The trade in illegal alcohol was controlled by the gangsters. These gangsters were able to make great fortunes. It is estimated that $2 billion was made as a result of illegal sales of alcohol. These gangsters went on to organize protection rackets, prostitution, drugs, as well as controlling the illegal liquor trade. The most famous of all the gang leaders was Al Capone in Chicago. With the gangsters like Capone came violence. The rival gangs fought to control areas of territory where they could sell their illegal alcohol. Murders were commonplace. There were 130 in Chicago in 1926 and 1927 alone. The most notorious massacre took place on St. Valentine's Day in 1929. This is when Capone's men killed seven of Bugsy Moran's gang. They were dressed up as police officers and caught their rivals off their guard. Just as murders were commonplace, convictions for these murders became almost non-existent. These gangs controlled the law courts, the judges, the police, made it very difficult for anyone to be able to break their stranglehold. Capone was eventually sent to prison in 1931, not for all the murders or the racketeering, but because he'd failed to pay his taxes. Prohibition was finally repealed in 1933 under Franklin Roosevelt. The noble experiment had failed. Prohibition had made America a more lawless society. Here we have seen the key features of the 1920s, both in terms of the boom and the various social aspects, particularly involving blacks, women, and prohibition. Be sure when answering questions on this era that you are able to look at this range of factors and not just focus on one particular aspect. That is the way you will get the marks from the examiner. Good luck and goodbye.